Well, good morning, everyone. Happy Easter to you. Turn to the person to your left and say, Happy Easter. Turn to the person on your right and say, He is risen. Boy, if you could have saw what I saw right there, everyone did exactly as I said, and they were looking at the back of somebody's head. That was just a really cool moment right there. Well, my name is Jade, and I serve as the pastor here, and let me just extend a warm welcome to you. One of the best things that I get to do is to greet, to meet guests who are here. If that's you, please introduce yourself to me after the service. I'd love to be able to connect. And as KP said, we really do value having that next conversation. Maybe it's over a coffee, getting to know you, hearing your story, and so a warm invitation to jump in and be a part of our community here. Well, I walked in this morning to this stunning floral cross. Isn't this beautiful? This was put together by Kyla and a number of volunteers who were here early this morning. And we said there were going to be some surprises today, and this was a beautiful surprise to walk into. The kids have a surprise for us later in the service. The best cinnamon buns in the city were here. It's like, wow. And the other surprise was I walked into the distinct smell of Polish beer in this hall. Anybody with me on that? If you like the smell of Polish beer, you're welcome. Surprise. And if you don't and you find it kind of annoying, well, just I fully authorize you to have another cinnamon bun, all right? Just have that, and we're looking forward to our kids in a few moments also celebrating with us. Well, I know this is the early days of spring, and it's a glorious spring day today, isn't it? But this past week or so, our family was thinking about summer, making plans for summer, because we have a family tradition. Every summer, we go camping. And when you think about it, before the invention of the house, camping was everyone's family tradition, wasn't it? Now, I know when it comes to camping, you either love it or you hate it. I know that some people think that camping is nature's way of feeding mosquitoes. And our family has fed a lot of mosquitoes over the years. I know that some people think that the term happy camper is an oxymoron. I've heard the term, the only happy camper is the one who's leaving the campsite and going home to a nice hot shower. Well, we have learned to love camping as a family. We've made some great memories. And we've learned a thing or two along the way. We've learned things like, on the day you arrive to set up, the sun sets approximately 4 times faster than any other day. And we've learned that if there's a 25% chance of rain in the area, there's a 100% chance of it raining on your campsite. And the final thing that we've learned over the years is that guitar that's played late at night in the campsite next to you, it makes excellent kindling. So those are some of the things that we've learned as a family when we've gone camping. But one of the best spots we've gone to is a place called Bear Creek. We've gone here 4 or 5 times. It's in the Okanagan area. Anybody been to Bear Creek? Okay, so you don't, yeah, we have, JP and Susan have been to Bear Creek. It's this great spot. I think I have a picture of us at Bear Creek. I don't know if we have that picture. Do we have that, Nathaniel? There it is. It was the one time my boys were washing dishes and they looked happy. I had to capture it on film. But we've had some great memories camping together. It's this great spot. It's right on the water. There's a grassy area, a beautiful beach, grassy area, and a Starbucks is 12 minutes away. And one of the other things that we love about Bear Creek is that there is this hike. It's not a long hike. It's maybe an hour. And it starts going straight up. And we've done this hike a number of times. And up there are the most amazing views of Lake Okanagan. And up there, you can see waterfalls, and you can see some pretty cool rock formations and these beautiful ponderosa pine trees that are very common in the Okanagan. And one time when we went back to Bear Creek, we were anticipating going on this hike, but everything had changed. We had learned that a wildfire had ripped through that entire region. And after closing the hike in the park for some time, they had reopened it by the time we got there. And we went up there, and what we saw took our breath away. Instead of it being a beautiful place, there was a very somber feel. Instead of green, there was black. There was charred trees everywhere. Have you ever walked through a place where there's been a fire? You ever seen the forest after a fire, maybe even from the road? There's a kind of eerie feeling about it. And there was this recognition. What once was is no longer. And as we walked through that, we felt a certain kind of sadness. And today on Easter Sunday, it is a day of joy. It is a day of hope, and we're going to get there, I promise. But did you know that the Easter story doesn't start there? The Easter story starts in a very different place, like the feeling I had when I walked through that Bear Creek Park and things were charred and burnt and destroyed, a symbol almost of death, not of life. That's how the Easter story starts. The Easter story starts with sadness and with grief. And if you're here and you're brand new to the story of Easter, let me let you know that the story begins a couple days earlier on Friday. And Wayne recited the story for us of a woman named Mary. And throughout most of the weekend, Mary is in pain. She is under a cloud of darkness. Deep sorrow has set in because Mary has lost her close friend, Jesus. And what I found, friends, about Easter is that you can't skip Good Friday. You can't leapfrog over what happened on Friday and arrive on Sunday and expect it to make any sense. Sunday doesn't mean a whole lot unless you go through Friday. And the Easter story reminds us that God does something special. God does something incredible. God does something that no one ever thought possible. And he does it in the midst of grief. He does it in the midst of darkness. And so for just a few moments, we're going to lean into that darkness and explore what life might have looked like for Mary early Sunday morning. Well, who was Mary? Mary Magdalene, we know, was a close friend of Jesus. We are introduced to Mary and find out that Mary has experienced a lot of darkness in her life. We're told in the Bible that Mary was possessed with seven demons. Now, I'm not exactly sure what this means or what this looks like. Some commentators say these were evil spirits that took control of her, and she needed to be exorcised, maybe like you'd see in a Hollywood movie. And other people feel like maybe what Mary experienced was a profound and debilitating mental illness. And this is how ancient people described it. I don't know what the answer is, but I know that Mary lived with a lot of pain in her life. We know that people in this place were ostracized. They were shamed. They were either locked up or they roamed around the town almost homeless, half naked, calling and screaming out things. Mary knew something about a profound darkness over her life. But one day, Mary experienced a profound and a great reversal. She met Jesus Christ, and Jesus was the kindest. He was the wisest. He was the most compassionate and loving individual she had ever met. And everything changed. When Jesus met Mary, he healed her. He delivered her from whatever it was she was encountering, and she had been set free. And she walked with a new joy, a lightness in her step. She learned to become a follower of Jesus, to love him, to listen to his teachings. But when we pick up the story on Easter Sunday morning, Mary is in pain again. We're told that she is crying. Why? Because her friend Jesus has been killed. Jesus was the subject of mocking and scorn and beatings and floggings. And he was paraded in front of people in a kind of mock trial. And Mary watches all of this. You know, it's agonizing to watch your friends suffer. Some of you here have watched a loved one suffer, a spouse, a parent, a child, a close friend. And the agonizing thing about it is there's really nothing you can do. And Mary experiences all of this on Friday. And the only thing that Mary can do is to cry. That's all that there is to do, to feel the pain of her friend, her hope. Jesus is now gone forever. I know, as I look across this room, I know that some of you have lost loved ones. You've lost a spouse or a parent or a child, a friend. You know what it's like to walk through a season of inconsolable grief. A few years ago, I lost my grandmother, who was the closest family member that I've lost. And for some reason, maybe because she was the last surviving grandparent, maybe because we were particularly close, but I felt her loss in a deep and profound way. And I remember her funeral was in Calgary, and family had gathered, and then the funeral ended, and everyone went home. And I had this sense that everyone is going back to life as normal. And I just couldn't do that. I thought everyone wants to pretend that life just goes on and everything is normal, but I felt this deep loss, this pain. I remember sitting at my desk and being paralyzed with grief. I couldn't do anything but to cry. And this is the place that Mary's in. We know something about darkness too, don't we? Mary cries early that Sunday morning, and you and I know something about what it means to weep and to cry. You know, as a pastor, one of the things that happens when you're a pastor is that people want to meet with you when they're in crisis. And I meet with an individual who tells me that things are pretty bleak in their marriage. That there is absolutely no warmth and affection left. It's like the relationship has died. And I think about that journey through Bear Creek and the charred remains, and this person describes that there's really no hope left. And I meet with someone else who describes their journey through life-threatening illness in their family. And you know, all of their future hopes, all the things they hope for, all of their plans now have a giant question mark over them. I think about my own dad a little closer to home. My dad is 80. My dad has always had good health, always had a sharp mind, always had this impeccable sense of directions and never getting lost. And in the last 2 or 3 years, something has changed. My dad is getting lost. He's getting disoriented. He used to have this mind like a calculator, and now numbers confuse him. And he forgets names. And I listen to my mom, and I hear the tears in her voice as she describes how daily life is changing. And how tough that is. And on Easter Sunday, we're reminded that as this story starts in darkness, Mary is asked, "Why are you crying?" And maybe that question is for us today. What is the darkness in your life? Why are you crying? What is the darkness or the pain that you are experiencing, the grief? And can I invite you just for a moment to go there, to lean into that, to go to where Mary was early Sunday morning, to see where God might meet us in the midst of our darkness? I thought of a friend that I sat at a wedding with fairly recently. His name is Wilson. And just in this past 10 days or so, Wilson passed away and went to be with the Lord. He had a long journey with cancer, and Wilson leaves behind his wife Rose and his 2 3-year-old twins, Isaac and Isabella. And I thought about Isaac because his funeral is tomorrow, and I thought, there is pain and death and darkness all around us. What does it mean on Easter to enter into that place? And how might God meet us in that place? Well, friends, the Easter story, thankfully, doesn't end in darkness. Because on that Sunday morning, something remarkable happened. In the midst of the darkness, where Mary could not see anything, her tears blinded her to the presence of Jesus, something remarkable happened. She didn't find Jesus, but Jesus found her. And in perhaps the greatest reversal of history, in perhaps the greatest moment ever, if there was a moment in history I'd like to go back to and just observe, it would be this. Jesus appears to Mary. In the greatest reversal from death to life, here's the Easter story, is Jesus is not dead. He doesn't remain in the grave, but he defeats death. He is alive. And he says, "Mary." Mary, he calls her by name, and though she didn't see him before, in that moment, everything is transformed for Mary. She looks and she sees that it is her Lord, her Savior, the leader of her life, her friend, Jesus Christ, is alive. Some people say, skeptics say, you know, Mary just, she wanted to believe it so badly that in the end she saw what she wanted to see. But friends, what you need to know is that nobody expected this to happen. Nobody saw this coming. Yes, some Jews believed it at the very end of time, a resurrection would happen. But nobody believed that a resurrection would happen in the middle of history. Mary is in a place where she has no reason to hope. And in this moment, this one incredible moment, Jesus speaks her name, Mary. And in that moment, everything changes. The joy that Mary experiences is far greater and deeper than the grief she experienced. It's a great reversal. You know, the best stories that we have, the best movies that we have, the best novels that we have are stories of great reversal. They're stories that don't avoid the darkness. They take us there. And then there's a sudden twist, something we never saw coming. And the twist at the end brings us more joy than we ever thought possible. And this is the Easter story, that Jesus does not remain on the cross. He doesn't remain in the grave, but that he comes back to life. And here's the hope we have, friends, that if God can raise Jesus from the dead, then God can do a great reversal in our lives. He can give us hope. As I look out, I see my friend Kevin Hackstead partway back here. Kevin has given me permission to share part of his story. Kevin grew up in a home which in some ways was very difficult. He described to me that as a kid, one of his earliest memories was that he hated weekends. Why? Because both of his parents drank very heavily. And on weekends, they would get drunk, and Kevin remembers his dad smashing things in his home. And as Kevin grew up, at about age 15, he too, maybe based on the model he had seen, began to drink. He began to smoke pot with his friends. He began even to break into people's homes to steal money and booze. And at 15, another kind of profound darkness set in Kevin's life because his dad was killed. His dad was hit as he was driving by a train. His dad had been drinking. And in time, Kevin's mom, who remarried, moved with Kevin's stepdad to Lethbridge, Alberta, and made it clear that they would prefer if Kevin didn't come with. And so, at a very young age, Kevin dropped out of school and moved in with some friends here in the Lower Mainland. That simply fueled his drug addiction, his growing drug addiction. He added cocaine and LSD to his list of preferred drugs. And at 19, Kevin got married. He says the marriage was terrible. It was doomed from the beginning because we were both drunks. A short time later, Kevin is arrested and sentenced to 10 years in prison for property-related crime. This is a pretty dark story up to this point. There's no glimmers of hope, and yet something begins to happen. Perhaps, as Mary heard her name called, perhaps at some point when Kevin was in prison, he began to hear whispers that God was calling to him in some way, not audible whispers, but God was trying to get his attention. Kevin says that from time to time he prayed, usually to get out of a jam or something. While Kevin is in prison, he gets word that his wife has committed suicide. Kevin is released from prison, and he moves to the Lower Mainland to live with his sister, and his sister has become a follower of Jesus Christ. And slowly, Kevin begins to hear God calling his name. He begins attending church, and he says, at that point, I knew the battle was on because I was still addicted to these drugs, and I wanted so much to be clean and sober, but it was a battle. He lived with some other Christian men at the time, and he said, despite my best resolves, on Friday, I would find myself downtown using, and by Sunday, I was broke. And on Easter Sunday, 20 years ago today, Kevin Hackstead got baptized. He continued to hear God calling his name. But he says that it wasn't as simple as that because Kevin had 12 or 13 major relapses over the next few years. And finally, one day, Kevin made this decision. God, my life is yours. I surrender everything that I have and everything that I am to you. It's no longer mine, it's yours. And perhaps in the clearest way, Kevin heard Jesus call his name. And since that day in 2003, Kevin has been sober and clean. Kevin went on to meet Elaine, the love of his life. And Kevin and Elaine sensed God calling them in another way. In what's nothing short of a great reversal, Kevin and Elaine opened a home for men who were recovering, men who were addicted, but wanting to recover and be clean. And over 12 or so years, they got to know many friends and see many people on the road to recovery. And the story continues, because Kevin and Elaine have sensed that in light of the refugee crisis, they are opening their home now to refugees. And on May the 1st, they will welcome their first refugee family with more to follow. God is alive in me, and I talk to him every day. God has blessed me beyond my wildest dreams. I feel that I have a great life with Christ living in me. We have an awesome God. Friends, I share this story with you because the Easter story ultimately is a story of hope. The Easter story reminds us that in the midst of any darkness in this life, we can hear God calling our name, and he can do a great reversal. In the midst of the tears we experience in this life, God can do a great reversal. In the midst of any tears and sorrow we have about death, God can do a great reversal. The Easter story leaves us with hope. Now, I know we use that word hope very casually. We say things like, I hope it doesn't rain. I hope that Jade's sermon doesn't go too much longer. That's really wishful thinking right there. I hope that I don't have to fly United Airlines anytime soon. But hope in the Bible is not described as wishful thinking. Hope is described as a rock-solid conviction that changes how we live. And friends, the Easter story gives us hope. If God can raise Jesus Christ from the dead, what can God do in our lives? If God can take Jesus Christ out of the deepest human darkness and resurrect him, then it breathes hope and life into our lives that we too can experience a great reversal. Now and after death, death does not have the final word. Life does. We can have hope that for loved ones who have passed away, it was not goodbye, it was not farewell, but it was simply good night, and we'll see you in the morning. We can have hope that in the end, evil doesn't win, goodness and love does. We can have hope that in the end, injustice does not conquer, but justice and love do. Maybe you're here today and you are walking through a season of darkness. And it's painful, and it hurts, and it feels like nothing good is happening. My hope and my prayer for you today is that you would look at this cross and you would have hope breathed into you fresh. You know, our kids here at East Van have been working on these beautiful butterfly projects over on the window over here. And the butterfly is the perfect image for Easter. Because as beautiful as they are, you know the story of the butterfly. It is a caterpillar. Still beautiful, not quite as beautiful. And then what happens? It goes into a cocoon. It goes into darkness. And I don't know about you, but that's not that attractive, is it? That's not that beautiful or hopeful. It looks like nothing is happening. That's what it feels like in the darkness. And yet, friends, if you are there, let me invite you, because of the Easter story, because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, we can have hope that the story doesn't end there. The story doesn't end in darkness, it ends in life and hope and light. And maybe you're here and you have never, like Kevin described, never surrendered your life to Jesus.
Maybe today you have sensed in some small way God is calling to you. Maybe it's not an audible voice, but you sense in some way that God has got your attention, that you want to experience this hope and this great reversal. In a moment, I'm going to pray, and I would invite you, if you desire that, to pray this prayer in your heart. To pray this prayer silently, to indicate to God you want to experience this great reversal and this great hope. Let's pray together. God, we come on this Easter Sunday and we look at this cross and we want to experience a great reversal in our lives. Jesus, we come to you and offer you ourselves. Jesus, come into my life. Bring hope. Bring light. The way you found Mary, find me. Here I am. I offer you myself. Help me to follow you. In Christ's name, amen.